Hi, everyone. Welcome to Nancy's Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy, and I host the show. And today, I have a really great guest on. He's into the subject that I'm into. His name is Greg Bishop. He's an author. He's been researching UFOs for a long time and a lot of government things. So, Greg, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks, Nancy.
You're very welcome. Now, Greg, before we start talking about your book and what you do, why don't you let the people know a little bit about Greg and what prompted you to start doing all your research?
Well, I don't really have a professional degree in anything. Actually, my degree, the only degree I have is in art history. There are no degrees given in ufology. That's probably a good thing, actually. And I don't really know how I'm interested in it. I guess I started reading books from an early age, and the obsession never left me, except for a few years in high school when people get interested in other things, of course. And I continued that interest after I got out of college and started writing about UFOs and things related to it, particularly the book Project Beta, which actually takes place in Albuquerque and New Mexico. That was in 2005. And I've got a couple other books, too. One is a collection of articles from my magazine, which is called Wake Up Down There, which is kind of strange because that's it's sort of like the name of the conference. Mm-hmm. I actually got that phrase from John Keel. And the other book is Weird California, which is just about strange things in California, like UFO flap areas, abandoned hospitals, strange houses people have, just anything strange that happens to be in California. That was published in 2006. But I really don't know why I'm interested in it. It must just be because I like things that just don't fit in, and finding out why they don't fit in and how people react to it. I mean, I think that fascinates me more than anything.
Greg, do you think it's kind of funny that a lot of people are just like yourself? They're into it. They don't quite know why they're into it. They just want to know about it because, like you said, it's strange. It's quote, not really been accepted by our government yet, although we know that that's not true. You know, but people look into stuff like that, and a lot of people who have seen UFOs, even maybe been an abductee, you know, they know about this stuff, but they don't necessarily want to talk about it. And then people like yourself, people like me come along, and it's like, man, I just want to hear all about this stuff because I think it's so cool, it's so neat. You know, so that could be probably one of the reasons why a lot of people are into the UFOs. You know, everybody wants to see one. Everybody wants to, you know, say, oh, God, I got to see one. So what do you think would happen, Greg, if a lot of people would actually have a UFO land right around where they could actually see it? What do you think the people would do?
What do you mean, individually or as a society or all
both
of that?
Both. All of
Well, it, what I find with people that witness these things, a lot of it, I think, depends on their predisposition and their expectations. I mean, if they're expecting to see UFOs or are aliens from other planets and they're coming to do whatever people think they're going to do, then that's what they'll see. Other people will be are completely against any kind of interpretation except the one that that has been given to us by our expectations and all that, which is, you know, by a skeptical mindset or a fundamentalist skeptical mindset, which means it's anything but something unexplainable. So a lot of people would just say, well, I just saw something that was an experiment or I was hallucinating or whatever. But I think most people are open-minded and it would probably make them reassess a lot of the things that they thought before, any skepticism they might have had. I'm not necessarily sure it would be a good thing, actually.
Yeah, there,
and as a society, I mean, I personally think that there is some sort of other intelligence besides humans that interact with us occasionally and has been for a long time. If people could be forced to deal with that and not really accept it, but start to think about it, maybe that mystery would be a little bit less of a mystery. I don't know how it would affect, you know, people on a large scale, but it would certainly make them question things that they thought in the past, and also maybe make a lot of people try to seek answers to things they didn't really care about before.
Mm-hmm. Might wake them up a little bit, you know. Just might. Now,
yeah, that's. I think that's what I was suggesting. It would just shake people up and make them. You know, a lot of things would become less important. A lot of silly things that we deal with every day, and the dumb fights we have, and that would become less important, and people would start to look outward and also inward, actually, into what their psychological makeup is, and what kind of answers they're looking for.
Let's talk a little bit about the Project Beta, because I don't know if everybody knows about that. There's the people down here in New Mexico where I'm at that do know about it, and they still question. So let's talk about it. What's it all about?
Well, it's about an electrical physicist named Paul Benowitz who had actually the company still exists, a company called Thunder Scientific, which is in Albuquerque. He was seeing lights over Kirtland Air Force Base, and later he was picking up transmissions, and he thought these things were alien UFOs from another planet, so he told the Air Force about it. He figured he should. The only people at the base that were interested in what he was saying were the security people, because he was seeing things that were going on there that most likely were not actual unidentifieds, but something that was being tested there. And they didn't want him talking to anybody about it, or if they wanted to know who was talking to him and who was coming to him for information, because then you can figure out who's, you know, who the agents are and all that. Unfortunately, he was very suggestible to his own, actually to his own ideas, and then a few the Air Force encouraged in him, and eventually he ended up in a mental health facility. His family put him there because they were worried about his health. The Air Force also contacted the UFO research community and enlisted at least one and probably more UFO researchers to kind of keep an eye on each other and tell the Air Force and other agencies in the government what was going on and what people were looking at and what they were thinking about. And I think it's mainly because they just wanted to keep a lid on secret projects. This was in the Reagan years, in the late 70s and through the mid-80s. So this is straight through the middle of the Cold War. And so that was their main concern. But as a result of this interaction with Paul Benowitz, the stories about underground bases run by aliens and exchange of abduction rights for UFO technology and all this, all these rumors and stories got started with that interaction with Paul Benowitz, mostly through Paul Benowitz thinking this is what was going on and the Air Force encouraging it. And those stories are still with us today to varying degrees. And there's also varying degrees of truth to some of them, not necessarily aliens and UFOs, but locations of bases and hints into some of the projects they were conducting at that time. They still do actually at Kirtland, but not, I don't think, nearly as much as they did in the 1970s and 80s when it was going full steam. But okay. The upshot of it is that something that was basically made up in the 1970s and 80s, a lot of these stories are still with us. And I think the reason I wrote the book mainly was because I wanted to find out what's going on. And the upshot of everything was that if you see these things going on again, like this person from the government is now telling so-and-so researcher that quietly that this is going on or you should look at this, I think other people, and especially that researcher, should be really careful about where that information is coming from and consider that it might not be in their best interest to believe everything. It's a very complicated thing that goes on between researchers and government contacts. And I've been interested in that for a long time. Anyway, that's gone into very heavily in the book. And people want to read that whole story, they can pick up the book.
And where would they find the book at, Greg?
Amazon still has it. I'm going to order a few copies of it here before the conference and bring them. And I can sign them and talk to people about it. And probably use booksellers as well, because I believe it's out of print now.
Okay. What Greg is talking about is that my 501c3 is hosting a conference in the Albuquerque, New Mexico area, April 29th through May 1st, and it's called the Wake Up Now Conference. And the reason why it's named like that is because there's a lot of things that people need to know about, need to talk about. you know, some of it is the myth, some of it is truth. And so we have 15 guest speakers, Greg being one of them, coming in for this conference. And it is a fundraiser to help raise money to build the school that my project is called the School of Now. So if anybody's interested in finding out more about that, they can go to www.wakeupnowconference.com, and all the information is there. Now, Greg, I live over by Los Lunas, but I'm the last house before nothing, okay, in the mountains. And
where do you live by? I'm sorry, I think it got cut off a little bit.
By the Manzano Mountains.
Oh, okay, yeah. You can see the fence around and everything.
Well, see, where my house is, I'm the last house before there's anything to the mountains. So I get to see some strange things that go on out here a lot, you know, and I'm sure
really?
Part
like
of
what?
It is. Well, one night, because I go to bed very, very late, and I always, my bedroom window faces due east, which is where the mountains are.
Mm-hmm.
One night, I was looking, you know, before I go to bed, because I always look out to see what's going on, and there's this huge, huge white ball that's just like sitting, not right on the mountain, but just above the mountain, just sitting there. And I didn't have binoculars or telescope or anything, so I don't know what it was. But it was just sitting there. And I watched it for like 20 minutes, maybe 25 minutes, and the thing didn't move. And it's not there all the time. I've only seen it once. So, and again, I look out every day. So after watching it, excuse me, for about 20, 25 minutes, all of a sudden it starts shooting red lasers out all over, and it disappeared, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I get to see those kind of things, and it doesn't surprise me that it might be some experiments that Kirkland is doing,
mm-hmm.
because Kirkland is just on the other side of the Manzano and, you know, north of where I am. But those kind of strange things happen all the time. One time I was sitting, the house that I have, the south side of the house is mostly windows, and I was sitting talking with a client, and I'm looking up at the sky, and this white ball just zooms past the windows, like took maybe 17 seconds to go from one side of the windows all the way through almost to the other side of my house, up
yeah.
way up high. So I get to see all kinds of stuff like that, you know, and it's not that, you know, it bothers me, because I'm all for looking at things and investigating things, you know, so I'm very much into, well, if it is, it is, and if it isn't, it isn't, but at least, you know, let us all know, you know, so I'm not into the cover-up thing. I think everything should be exposed, period. You know, so I get to see things like that, and I don't tell a lot of people, because they're going to do like, oh, yeah, all right, Nancy, you're dreaming. It's like, no, wide awake at the time, okay? But most people know I'm very much into UFOs and, you know, knowing about things. And so I get to see those kind of things. And then there are stars that you would think are stars, but they change colors, okay? You know,
yeah.
They'll go red, blue, green, yellow. You know, they change colors, and they're way up high in the sky. So, I didn't have binoculars or telescope, but those kind of things happen out here because there's nothing by me. There are four houses where I live, and that's it. And the rest is all openness. So it's
do you live in
cool.
Four Hills or a different place?
No, it's a different place. Actually, there's a high school is probably about, I don't know, maybe a quarter mile away. And that's the only big thing that's there. It's called Valencia High School. You know, but then
okay.
there's like four houses. And then my house is the last one before 12 miles before you get to the mountains.
You must. You're there all the time. You must see all kinds of things. And I would think that anything that anybody sees there that's doing strange things like that is probably
mm-hmm.
some kind of test.
Mm-hmm.
Although there are reports, and I have them in the book, actually from the Air Force through Freedom of Information. No, these were just given out to researchers at one point. Of UFOs that did come in over, you know, did come in over the mountains and did land and had security people come up to them and all this. I don't know if those are true reports because those are the only reference we have for them. But the Air Force seems to acknowledge that there are unknowns that occasionally come in over the base. Now, you know, either that means there are unknown flying objects coming in over the base, or they're trying to confuse researchers into thinking that there are, so that they. Pay attention to them as UFOs or, you know, alien spaceships or whatever, and not as tests that are being conducted at the base. I mean, that's kind of standard. And it still works, too, so I think they would still use it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure they do. You know, and it's really funny because, you know, people tell me a lot of stories that have been here for a long time because I've only been here, it's going to be 2 years this coming April, so next month.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they tell me a lot of stories of people who've been here, like, for a long, long time. And one of the stories that I was told is that the part of the Manzano Mountains have been hollowed out by the military, and that they use it for a lot of different kinds of testing, things that they really don't want people to know about. And if somebody, you know, like a, say a worker from the outside has to go in to fix the air conditioning or the heating or whatever, they are escorted in there with guns and told, you do not look around. If you do, we'll shoot you, you know. And I don't know how true that is, but again, it's a pretty big story if people would really look into it. But this, you know, this comes from
people. The mountain is, it was hollowed out in the 1940s. Like in 1947, they actually dug it out. There's news articles about it. And if you look at a satellite picture of Manzano, you can see the entrances going in, hundreds of them. They used to store nuclear weapons components in there. And it was the largest nuclear weapons storage area in the world in the 1980s. I think a lot of that stuff has been moved out. But there are still things that go on underground inside that mountain, and there will continue to be. It's a very strange place, and yes, there is a not really a base, but just a complex under that mountain. And behind that mountain, away from Albuquerque, east of Manzano, where nobody can really see, is a laboratory facility run by Sandia Labs, I believe, in a place called Coyote Canyon. And that is a whole other strange area, which is discussed in Project Beta in my book.
Yeah, I mean, because what I've been told, because I'm real nosy, and I like to go look at everything. I like to, you know, go to, we had the Mystery Rock here, you know. I mean, I go to these places, even though they say, no, you're not supposed to go there. It's like, well, I don't care. I just want to go see what's there.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
People have talked, you know, they've talked about the Sandia Labs and Kirkland and White Sands Military and Dulce and all those being connected, as and also Alamosa, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm always the one to go, oh, man, let's go, let's go. And I'd like to go to Dulce. And everybody said, Nancy, don't want to go to Dulce. Well, to tell me you don't want to go someplace like that is like putting that red flag in front of the bull.
So oh, yeah, point, me too. Yeah. I've been there three times. The first time in the 1980s, just by myself, driving through. And the next two times were once with a film crew a few years ago, and once for Norio Hayakawa's conference up there a couple of years ago, the underground base conference. And it's a fascinating place out in the mountains there. And I know Gabe Valdez, who used to be the police officer, state police officer up there, and he and a few other people have said, repeated to me, why don't we go out there and we'll show you where this underground base supposedly is, or where people think it is, because they say that there actually is evidence there, and I'd like to see it, just like you said, okay, take it there, you know?
Yeah, let's go.
And I would love to do it, and at some point I think I will do it. For the longest time, I didn't think there was any base there at all or anything, you know, that was just a rumor started by Paul Benowitz and the Air Force security people. And then I find out through completely different channels, not having anything to do with anybody in Dulce, anybody connected to the story, that I met a guy who said that he worked in underground facilities and he had never been to Dulce, but he had heard from many people that there was a facility near there. So that forces me to reassess. You know, I don't. As new information comes in, I will change my mind about things. Now, I don't think that equals aliens were underground and there was a big fight there and all this. I think it means that there probably is or was a base there or near there. And they just wanted to send out rumors to see who came looking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which researchers,
yeah,
which foreign nationals, which, you know, whatever. Sending out a rumor is a really good way to get people interested, sometimes people that you want to know more about. So I think that goes on, too. And I'm almost certain it has because it's an old counterintelligence technique. So, yeah, it's a very big, a very weird, and a very complicated story. But just like you, it still fascinates me. I want to go see. Also, people have cited Bigfoot out near Dulce. Why would that be happening? You know, that's been going on for many, many years. What is Bigfoot doing out in an area where there's cattle mutilations, a rumor of an underground base, and all kinds of strange things flying through the air? It's a strange and wonderful place, and it's I don't think all the data and all the fascinating things going on there have been looked at or paid attention to enough yet, and I hope it is in the future.
Yeah, that would be great. Somebody had told me that they, when it comes to Dulce, it's like a make-believe town. There's only like 2,500 residents there, which a lot are mostly Indians, as I've been told. And yet they built a brand new shopping mall, a brand new hotel, a brand new high school. I mean, it's like they built all these new things there when there isn't a lot of people there. You know, so there's just like a lot of stuff. So it's like, to me, it's intriguing because, one, I have not seen it, and I've read a lot of stuff about it. But, I won't really be satisfied until I can say, yeah, I went over there.
You can explain that many ways. There's mineral rights up there. And they have a casino, although it's small. I think they probably also, the Hickory Apache are the people that live there. That's their land. And they also, I believe, have real estate and things like that, which may account for all that building, or it might not. The other thing is the area is used and has been by the military for training and all that for quite a long time, and that, you know, that might be part of it too. They come from Colorado and other places and use that wilderness as a training area.
And it's supposed to be pretty wild. So I'm intrigued, and at some point in time here in the very near future, I'm really going to have to go over there and check that out. You know, so I come up with my own answers, my own conclusions, rather than...
You have to look at it yourself. People tell me stuff all the time. I think this and this and this is happening. So, well, have you gone and looked, checked it out yourself? No. So, well, then how can you believe it? In fact, if you go check things out, sometimes they become, you know, the mystery deepens.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of getting an answer, you get a lot more questions. And that fascinates me, too, and I'm sure it does you as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like I came here exploring, and the way I found this house, I was actually exploring. I wanted to go toward the Manzanos to see what was back there. You know, and I'd only been here for about 6 or 7 months at the time. And I go, man, it's just cool. There's this kind of draw, this kind of energy, and I need to go take a look at it. So my daughter and myself just did this big loop, and then I ended up finding this house that I now have. And then my daughter's house, the lady who has this house has two. And so my daughter had got one, and I got one. And then one of my friends from Chicago actually moved here, and she got one. So there's three of us in our own little complex here, you know, which is fine with me. And so when it's dark here, it's dark. But the stars come out really, really cool. In fact, sometimes they're so great, it looks like the stars go all the way down to the ground. You know, I mean, it's just so neat.
It's so clear out there. And if you're behind some hills, it blocks out a lot of the city light, and you really can see things. It is beautiful there at night, and you can see a lot. Somebody told me and suggested this, and I think it's gone around the UFO research community, is that what people can do is get night vision equipment and look up. Instead of looking around at the ground and people and animals and all that, look up into space with night vision equipment, and you see all kinds of things that you couldn't see before. Things that are faint, that can't really be seen with the naked eye or with telescopes. But with night vision, which amplifies all the available light, people see all kinds of things moving through the sky, and not necessarily exactly like satellites. So I would like to try that at some point. Problem is, night vision equipment is rather expensive.
No, it is. You know, maybe when you come for the conference, if you guys stay for a little bit, I'll take you around to some of the things I know. Like the Mystery Rock is here just in Los Angeles.
Is that the one with the inscription on it that people have had a hard time deciphering?
Yeah, trying to figure out what it is and how long it's been here and all kinds of
stuff. Yes, I know, but I always wanted to see that.
Well, I've got passes for all of us if we want to go the following Monday after the conference. So, you know,
I would love to do that.
Okay, cool, because I was going to take some people over there. I've been over there a couple times now. First time I went, I couldn't find it, but I went on the wrong path, and I actually went up on top of the mountain where there's some Indian ruins, and I went in the snow. So everybody goes, Nancy, are you crazy? But, you know, I just, when I get this thing to go, I got to go. You know, and I found the Indian ruins on top of the mountain. And then the second trip I went up there, I brought somebody who knew exactly where the stone was, which made it really easy because I climbed the mountain for nothing, okay? But on top of the mountain.
I'd help, yes.
But on top of the mountain, there's also another small, like, little tablet that's got some writing on it, too. And then on the other side from where the Mystery Rock is, on the total other side of the mountain, is supposed to be another one. So there's a lot to do on that little mountain there, and I find it really very thrilling. That's just like we have the Ladrone Peak here. Now, the Ladrone Peak has a history of UFOs flying in and never flying out.
Mm.
You know, And that has an energy. That whole mountain, the base of that mountain, is made out of white quartz crystals. So it's gorgeous. And I've been up there, too, because it's like it pulled me, and I finally had to go. You know, so around where I live, there's all kinds of stuff to go look at and investigate. You know, and then down in Socorro, they were supposed to have had a crash down there, I think in the 50s or something. And
there
then,
was a, supposedly, a police officer saw a strange vehicle with two figures next to it, and as he got closer to it, they jumped in whatever the vehicle was, and it took off. That was, the Socorro incident, I think, was 1965 or 4, something like that.
Yeah, something in that. And then, of course, we have
police
the Roswell.
Officer, the only witness died last year, Lonnie Zamora.
Yeah, it was really funny because they had a special for that, you know, about that crash and whatever. And I went to it and I listened to it and I thought, oh, that's pretty interesting. But then I did find out that he had died. You know, that's just like the Roswell crash. There's a lot of history to that that people still are kind of left in the dark with, and they're still trying to prove that it is or it isn't. You know.
Yeah, I've had talks with people about this, and I think it's, especially since most of the witnesses are gone now, I don't think we're ever going to find, unless somebody in the government finally says, you know, it was this or that, and, you know, at that point you still don't know. If they say it was an alien craft, everybody will be happy. If they say, well, no, it wasn't, everybody's going to say, well, no, they're lying again. So I think it's almost impossible to find out what happened in Roswell, although something did happen, and it was of great concern to the government at the time.
Oh, yeah, because they have the histories of that, which is kind of cool, because I went there, too. When I first got here, I said, well, I've got to go to Roswell. In fact, before I moved here, I went through Roswell on the way back to Chicago, one of the trips I made, just because I wanted to go through it, you know, and see. And, you know, they had their little museum, and I didn't get to see that until this last year when I actually took, you know, my group of my four generations of women that came down here with me, and we all went over to Roswell to check it out. So it was pretty interesting. But also around
you got to go there at least to see what's there and talk to people and experience it. It's important. It's an important pilgrimage.
It is, you know, and it's actually not a bad area to go to either. I mean, the temperature and that was pretty good when I went. But they also have the thing that happened over Farmington, and when that happened. Over Farmington,
yeah, the fleet or whatever it was called in the that happened in the late 1950s, I think, or no, more early 1950s.
Yeah, which was again, you know, kind of interesting. And Norio, actually, who's also going to be at the conference, the one that you said a little bit ago, he talks about the Farmington and Aztec and Dulce because he's done a little bit of investigation with that. And research, so I think that's kind of cool. Now, did you do anything with Area 51 ever?
Not as a researcher. I went out there in the 1990s, the mid-1990s, and then later as well. Actually, there was a special. Larry King did a special there once. It was called Larry King Live from Area 51. I think he had Kevin Randall, Stanton Friedman, and... maybe Phil Glass, I'm not sure, on this show, live from out in the desert, right next to the little hotel there in Rachel. And at that point, I got in a car with somebody, and we drove out to the edge of Area 51 to the perimeter fence and saw the sign that said use of deadly force authorized, and a guy came up on a hill, you know, maybe half a mile away in a Jeep, two or three Jeeps, actually. And I brought binoculars, and I looked at them, and I saw them looking at me with binoculars. So that's my experience with Area 51. I've never seen anything strange flying over it. Other people have. And the one funny thing, connection I have with that story, is a UFO researcher who I discuss in my book, Bill Moore. He was one of the people given this deal. You cooperate with us and we'll give you government UFO documents. And he got them. But there's no way to figure out if they're actually real or worth anything, or true, partially true, or mostly true, or whatever. But he gave me a map that somebody had handed him in the 1980s before anybody cared about Area 51. Nobody, it wasn't on the horizon. Nobody knew anything about it. It wasn't being discussed on radio shows. Somebody in the government gave him a map of that area, and I still have the map. And in one little area, there's a in felt-tip pen, somebody put this little dotted line to show this little area and wrote Saucer Mesa under it. and told them that's where the government was testing UFOs that had been captured. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but somebody was obviously laying the foundation for some sort of interest in UFOs in that area years before it became a sensation in the UFO research community and you know, subsequently in popular culture. So, you know, the story of that base and what goes on there is I think we only know probably a couple percent of what goes on there. And the things that people think they know, or a lot of it, I think, was made up for public consumption, just so people would kind of put it on the back burner. Most people would just put it on the back burner, saying, "Oh, they're testing stuff there, and people think it's UFOs. So what?" And UFO enthusiasts say, "Well, it all came from, you know, they're testing stuff from other planets, and aliens gave us this technology." And I think the people that run that place and the government agencies that have business at that place are perfectly fine with that, because it just keeps people confused and talking about stuff that isn't really important to them. And if it is important, they'll hear about it, because there's some noise about the base with the UFO people. If you see what I'm saying, I mean, it's just so convoluted. That guy Bob Lazar that came out in the early 90s and said that he had worked there and had seen captured alien technology, and said that his life was threatened and all this. If it was that secret and it was that important that we not know about it, we wouldn't have heard about it. I mean, there's a lot of ways to shut people up without killing them.
Yeah, many. And I'm sure they've discovered a lot of them.
You can shut them up with money, with threats. If there's something in their past that's, you know, not kosher, and they might go to jail for all kinds of different ways. So when I hear about people that have worked at these bases and come out and talk about it, I start to wonder why they're being allowed to talk. There's got to be some other compelling reason from the powers that be that these people can talk. And, you know, one of them is because they're not saying anything important. Two, because maybe they're planted and they're supposed to be saying that stuff, wittingly or not. Or three, maybe it's partially true and they're just so, it just sounds so crazy and most people won't listen to them that the government doesn't care. I happen to think that, you know, on an individual basis, there's elements of all three of those things going through any story you hear about underground bases or secret testing with UFOs or contracts with aliens or whatever. It's on an individual basis, I think, all three of those factors come into play. And I don't know which of them are true. I mean, it's fascinating to listen to, but it's, you know, who's ever going to figure out exactly what those stories amount to? They probably have more to do with national defense than they have to do with aliens from other planets, I think. But like I said at the beginning, I do think there's some sort of non-human intelligence that interacts with us. And if the government knows about it, which I think they do, I really think that they don't exactly know what to do with it or how to control it. So they're perfectly happy to let everybody think they either know more than they do, or that, and that they're trying to confuse people about it. Because I don't think that these extra human intelligences, as I call them, I don't think we're probably ready to understand exactly how they do interact with us and how much of our expectations enter into that interaction.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a complicated problem, and what I think a government cover-up is a cover-up of more of ignorance and helplessness than of any kind of control of the situation.
Supposedly, President Eisenhower had contacts with UFO and did some kind of agreement with them, and that's just been told to me too. But I'm like you, Greg. I like to know, you know, is it true? Is it not true? And I kind of look into things. But you know, if that's true, that's pretty fascinating, because he's known about it for a long time. And then Reagan came up with the Star Wars thing, which is based totally on stuff that, you know, we really weren't quite sure of at the moment. Everybody kind of made fun of him, but you know, it turned out to be actually in our favor in the long run. Do you know anything about HARP, by some chance?
Not a whole lot about it. I kind of looked into it and studied it very early on, probably in the late 80s, more like the mid-90s, when people were first really talking about it. And that's another thing, another project where I think people are a lot more interested in the rumors and the disinformation about it than they are in actually what it might be. And the belief system takes over. And whoever runs HAARP, and for whatever purposes they really are running it, I think that's perfectly fine with them that people are arguing about it and have conspiracy theories, because it covers up the real purpose of it, and more importantly, the effects it might have on the environment, which I think are probably unknown, but that whoever runs it, the government entity that runs it, has decided that the risk is worth it so that they can control elements of the atmosphere, the upper atmosphere.
Yeah, something, you know, I don't know a lot about it. I've checked into it a little bit, but...
Yeah, you can see what my bias is. My bias is anything with the government, you really have to take whatever comes out of there with a grain of salt, because it's whatever information has come out on a secret project, it's almost invariably designed to mislead people and to flatter their prejudices about what they might think it would be instead of what it actually is. And I've seen that over and over again, so that's like I said, I will admit that's my prejudice.
Now, you also do writing at UFO Mystic blog site. Is that true?
Yes, I haven't written regularly there in a while. We've been on that site for, I think, this year will be 5 years. Nick Redfern and I were originally assigned to write for that site, and we were originally assigned to write, and still are, at least 4 days a week. The problem with writing 4 days a week is that I ran out of stuff to write about. I said everything I needed to say, because a lot of my pieces were opinion pieces and some research pieces. And if you go to UFO Mystic and look up my name, my articles, they're actually under the my postings there under the headline Wake Up Down There. So if you look up Wake Up Down There, all my posts will be there. And you can see the, you know, breadth of things I've written about, everything from William Burroughs and Whitley Strieber to underground base rumors to UFOs as an evolving system of an as an evolving art project, all kinds of weird things I've written about there.
But it's kind of those weird kind of things that people, I think, are pretty interested in. I'm actually supposed to interview Nick Redfern on April 3rd. So
I've known him for a long time. He's a fascinating guy. And after having multi-hour conversations with him on the phone a few years ago, probably about 5 to 10 years ago over that span, we figured out we pretty much agree on everything, our view of what's going on. He's done probably about twice as much research as I've ever had. His interests run into a lot of different areas. Mine do too, but he's gotten right down to the nitty-gritty of a lot of it, particularly strange creatures like chupacabras and Bigfoot and things like that. So he's a fascinating interview and a really intelligent guy.
I interviewed him probably about 5 years ago when I was back in Chicago, or even a little bit longer, and I found him really fascinating, and I thought, well, man, let's just try this again. Now, you also hosted a show, but it got shut down. Do you want to talk about that? Would you like to explain that a little bit?
Which one? Which one are you talking about?
The Ghost, Hungry Ghost.
Oh, it didn't. Oh, you mean? Oh, yes, it did. It was music, and I just started interviewing people at that point. I still have a few of those interviews. This was in 1998 and 99. There was a pirate FM station in Los Angeles called KBLT. We were at 104.7, I believe, which was one of the few frequencies that were not being used at the time. I think that's being used now. And it broadcast 24 hours a day, an unlicensed FM signal. You could hear it all over the L.A. area and eventually down into south of L.A. into Long Beach and places like that. What I did was I played music, and then after a while I started reading out of my books and out of UFO books and things like that, and interviewing people. And that went on for 2 years, and then one day the signal shut off. And we didn't know what was going on, so the girl that was running the station ran up there to look, and somebody had turned off the power to the transmitter, which was remote from the actual studio. It was all very clandestine. So she turned it on, and a couple days later, it was shut off again. So she went back there, and there were FCC agents waiting there for her. It was basically the end of the pirate radio station.
Uh-huh.
And then the next year, in September of 2000, a internet station was started called Kill Radio. And I joined that one, and ever since then, I've been on that station playing music and doing interviews. Last week, I talked to Tim Banal, who does Banal of America, which is a paranormal radio show. And I've had people on, Tim Beckley. Nick has been on a few times. Not Leslie, because she won't do interviews. Regan.
Actually, she did. I made her do one.
Oh, really? Oh, great, great. Now maybe she can do an interview, because I'd really love to have her on my show. Farah Yurdozu, the Turkish ufologist, I had her on. All kinds of different people. I've even had my flying instructor on, and a guy on talking about comedy and why it's important. But anything that just interests me, but it generally has to deal with the paranormal and UFOs, and that's on Sundays, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific time at killradio.org. That's when I do my show, and I'm there probably, that show airs probably, and it's live, about 95% of the time, because once in a while I have stuff to do on Sunday. But yeah, it's a volunteer radio station. It's just a collective of people, and I've had that show since, like I said, October, actually, of 2000. So I've been on that. I've had that show there for over 10 years now.
Cool. And you were also a consultant on the Conspiracy Zone. Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah, there was a show called, with Kevin Nealon hosted it. It was on in 2001. Actually, September 11th happened right in the middle of our first season. It was very strange, on a conspiracy show. That was on for two seasons. What they did was invite people on and basically had them debate about certain aspects of political conspiracies, UFOs, anything where you could, you know, where there was a controversy and a bunch of rumors. For instance, we did the Battle of L.A., which is that movie now, but we did a show on the original one from 1942. We also did a show on the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy. We'd have people come in, pro and con, and debate this. And Kevin Nealon would kind of like be the moderator and crack jokes and things like that. And it was a fun and fascinating show. I liked working on it. I was basically the consultant, and a couple times I was going to be the guest, but it didn't work out. But I really enjoyed working on that show, and I met a lot of great people. That's, you know, because they would have people on that were celebrities who were sort of interested in these subjects. I had Eric Idle on once, and I met him. And Ray Manzarek, the keyboardist from The Doors, I met him. Really nice guy. Adam West, who used to play Batman, I met him. Real nice guy. Gabe Kaplan, welcome back, Cotter. He was on talking about JFK assassination, because he actually used to work for Jack Ruby in his club as a comedian.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I got to see all these different people and interact with them. And you know, that was the consulting part was the least interesting part. The most interesting part was interacting with all these different people, actors and researchers and different players in these stories. It's just a fascinating experience, and I loved it. And one thing I noticed about Kevin Nealon, the guy knows how to be funny. I would go in and talk to him in his office, and he wouldn't, you know, I would bring up all these different subjects, and either he didn't want to talk to me or he didn't know about them. But when he got on stage, he could be funny at the drop of a hat. He was really good at it. I mean, you know, he's paid to be funny, and that's his talent. So it was a great experience. I mean, I'd do it again in a heartbeat.
That sounds great. Now, there's a documentary called Mirage Men. Can you talk about that a little bit?
That is being produced by two guys, John Lundberg and Mark Pilkington. There's a book called Mirage Men that Mark has had published that came out last year. And he basically used some of his research and some of my research he went a lot further with it and talked to people in the intelligence community and people related to it about their interaction with the UFO subject. It's one-of-a-kind book, one-of-a-kind documentary. The documentary, I believe, is still being edited. We were out in Albuquerque and Dulce 3 years ago working on it. And he got interviews with people that had never allowed themselves to be interviewed before, such as Kit Green, who used to work for the CIA at their strange desk where they field calls and stories about paranormal stuff. It's kind of like the X-Files desk. And Richard Doty, who was a main interview subject in my book, he actually got an on-camera interview with him. He was the agent assigned to Paul Benowitz's case and basically watched him and handled him throughout that period. And a few other people. Bob Emmenegger, who was given, who made a UFO documentary in the early 70s and was told he would get a film of actual aliens landing at Holloman Air Force Base. And then right at the last minute, the Air Force said, oh, sorry, you can't have it. And they've done this to a few different people over the years. Grant Cameron, if you know who he is, he's got a whole website where he describes this bait and switch that's been going on. But the Mirage Men documentary deals with all these people and basically the UFO community's interaction with the intelligence community and all the pluses and minuses, mostly minuses, of that interaction and how it's been going for many years, and talks directly with the people that were spreading the disinformation to the and the people that were receiving it. So I'm in it. Richard Doty's in it. Bob Emmenegger. Victor Martinez, if you know who that is. He was at the center of that Serpo thing from a few years ago. Anyway, the book is called Mirage Men, and so is the documentary. The book is available now, and the documentary should be out, I don't know, maybe this year.
That would be kind of cool. What is this Project Censor watchdog group thing? What is that? Does it still exist?
Yeah, they're still around. What they do is they Project Censored is a nonprofit group that basically combs the news store the news feeds of alternative press, usually because that's where these things come out, and determines which stories were the most underreported. Like I won an award for them for reporting on ethnic weapons, which is basically biological and chemical weapons designed to affect people of certain ethnicities based on, you know, their DNA and how they react to different pathogens. That was in, God, I can't remember what year that was, 2002 or 3. I came in on their list at like number 12 or something like that of underreported stories because it was an issue with the Arab and Israelis, and the Israelis were being accused of developing weapons that would only affect Arabic populations. So they could basically go in and, you know, spray something over a battlefield and all the Arabs would get sick and all the Israelis and people that were Arabic would not get sick. They were looking into that. Because the United States had been looking into it and other countries had, like Britain, for quite a long time. This was not reported really in the mainstream news, so Project Censored said, well, this is an important enough story that we want more people to pay attention to, so they had it up on their website and published a book about it. They do one every year, most underreported stories of whatever year it happens to be. So that was just one of my interests at the time, and it was, I had a report from the Army in their journal, their like in-house journal called Ethnic Weapons for Ethnic Weapons. My article is called Ethnic Weapons for Ethnic Cleansing. Anyway, I thought it was important that people know about that these things did exist and people were interested in it. Whether they were successful or not, we do not know. But like you said, a lot of things should be a lot more open than they are in regards to what people hear about and what they know about. And I guess I slightly disagree with you that some things should probably be kept secret because of the nature of the way the world is. But there's way, way, way too many things that are kept secret just because that's the culture of people that deal in intelligence and in international incidents, wars, things like that. If everybody could get along and we weren't involved in any kind of conflicts, yeah, why should there be any secrets? But the fact is that we are, and there are people that probably mean us and others harm, and so that I think that engenders the secrecy. And like I said, in some cases it should be used, but in a lot of cases it shouldn't.
Our time, Greg, is just about up. It went by really quick. So one more time, give out where they can listen to you on your radio show and where they can get your books.
Okay, the radio show is called Radio Misterioso. It's on Sunday nights, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific time at killradio.org. There's a link on the page. You can listen to it. I'm resetting up my radiomisterioso.com page so that you can hear the shows there. It got hacked by Russians a few months ago. So that's coming back. And you can, yes, hear the show live. Three books. One is Wake Up Down There. That was published in 2000. That's available online, Amazon, the usual places. Project Beta, which we talked about, same deal, online in many places. And Weird California, if you happen to live in California, or maybe even if you don't, that's also available at Barnes & Noble bookstores and also online as well. And I write occasionally for UFOmystic.com. If you want to look up my writings there, there's 4 years of my writing is at that site. And a few sites are coming up, but we'll, if I'm on again, I will talk about them later. I'm developing more websites for my work.
Great. Greg, it's been a pleasure having you on. I can't wait to meet you at the conference. And we'll go look at that, the rock, while you're here, because like I said, it's the very next day. I scheduled it so anybody that wants to stay can go look at the mystery rock that's here in Las Lunas. But thank you for taking the time to be on, and I will see you at the conference.
All right. Thanks very much, Nancy.
You're very welcome, Greg. You take care. And you, the listeners, please go to www.wakeupnowconference.com. This is truly one conference you're not going to want to miss out on, and it's coming up soon, April 29th through May 1st. May God bless all of you. Have a great week, and we'll talk later. Take care. Bye now.